Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. I'm Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to interview Claire Hope Cummings with her book, Uncertain Peril, Genetic Engineering and the Future of Seeds. Claire was trained as an environmental attorney, and she practiced for 20 years, four of them with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and she is currently a public radio and television reporter who is spreading information about some of the very, very important environmental, potential problems and concerns, including genetically modified foods. But actually, her book addresses more than just genetically modified foods. Hello, Claire. How are you today?
Oh, good morning, Susan. I'm great. I'm fine.
Are you calling from California?
I'm in Northern California near the Napa Valley.
Great. Well, that's where a lot of our agricultural history is in California. So
that's right. Yep.
Did you live there for a long time, or have you?
I've lived in California in various places all my life. I grew up in the Bay Area in more of an urban environment. But when I was little, I moved to the country, and I've been kind of what I call a country mouse ever since. I prefer it.
All right. Well, certainly, California being an agricultural center and also the center where many of our new ideas and sustainable living and organic farming come out of. So that was
true. Good. California and Oregon. I got to give props to Oregon because they were also an early leader in the organic farming, the return to organic farming, as you may know. That's the way we all always farmed until chemicals came in.
That's true. For thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
A very long time.
Maybe 100,000 years or more.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed your book. I have interviewed Jeffrey Smith on his book, Seeds of a Deception and Genetic Roulette.
Great.
And so I've got a little bit of background in this. But certainly, you know, the majority of the public is not aware of the tactics being used and the overall, I guess the overall plan, which is a little ominous. I think maybe we should take a minute to introduce him to the concept of how did organic farming become not organic, and then what did Monsanto and a few other companies do to kind of put us in the peril that we're in right now?
Well, that's the right question, because you refer to Monsanto, but farming and the fact that farming had been not necessarily chemical-less, but the chemicals were natural or the inputs, everything from manure to... Farmers always understood how to control pests and weeds. But as farming became much, much more intense in monocultures, the USDA started encouraging farmers to plant, you know, wall-to-wall corn or something like that. When that happens, and I always think of farming in terms of the natural context, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you put all of that out there, it's like a dessert table for bugs, right? So
right.
A cotton field, you know, the boll weevil will move in. Mm-hmm. So you have this situation where you've intensified and modified, into a unified crop. So it's an unnatural setting. You know, previously our farmers were small, more subsistence. They were very, very diverse.
Right.
You have animal and plant, and you know, so a lot of what that wasn't arbitrary is what I'm trying
mm-hmm.
to say. That, it,
right.
that people really understood how to produce food for themselves and their communities, and how to have that interrelationship in these and those patterns, those interrelationships controlled a lot of pests and bugs. And so then when that changed, two things happened. That there was a change in the way farming was put onto the land. And the second major change was during World War II, the chemicals that were used in the war and the production for that war produced a lot of chemicals, you know, nerve toxins and things that could be used as pesticides. So after the war ended, the chemical companies, and they're the same chemical companies that not only produced and promote all of these chemicals in the use of our food system, they're also now the ones that make the GMOs, and we'll get to
mm-hmm.
that. But
right.
basically, they had all this stockpile of all of these chemicals, and they wanted
mm-hmm.
to use it on the farm. So they started making, and they, a lot of it is driven. I think people think that farmers wanted these chemicals, but it really was not driven by the farmer necessarily. It was driven by promoters for particular interests as a product. And it may have started out, you know, fairly innocently enough, but it's become mm-hmm. the way to farm. Everybody talked about, oh, let's use science. Unfortunately, it was not, it was billed as a scientific way of farming. We now have plenty of science that says it's really bad for us. It's bad for the water. It's bad for the soil. It's bad for our bodies, the food, the animals. Mm-hmm. So we have all these diseases. You know, people may be familiar with the overuse of antibiotic and intensive animal production, mm-hmm. things like that. So that you kind of were asking about the forces at work. I think that mm-hmm. economic forces, geopolitical forces, but then these corporations seized that moment and said, hey, we've got the product for you. And then they went on a rampage of saying this was the only way to farm. And if your farmer if your neighbor is using those chemicals, the pest's mm-hmm. going to move over your yard, you know, so
right.
it becomes
yeah.
a problem too. So it snowballed, and it just, and I think people, and I know, you know, I was there around in the 50s and in hate to say it, even in the 40s. I don't think we knew then what the dangers were. We didn't understand that toxicity. And it seemed like a good idea. And I've lived and farmed in Southeast Asia, and they're still sort of in that same framework. If it kills bugs, it sounds like a good idea.
Right.
So these chemical companies were the ones that were promoting this shift to an artificial mm-hmm. means of weed and pest control in farming.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of get to it for you?
yeah. And so that led us into the chemical, arena and the larger. Instead of having a lot of smaller, more diverse farms, you had larger and larger farms.
Well, it's like human societies too. You know, if you pack a lot of people in a small space and you mm-hmm. and you deprive them of good nourishment, people are going to get sick, and
right.
the diseases will spread. So, if people want to think about the modern quote unquote farm,
mm-hmm.
that's what we're doing to the plants and the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a sane way to produce food, really. I mean, it may be, people say it's efficient. But that's because they're only measuring it in output on per acre crop,
right.
so many
right.
tons of corn. But the studies show that smaller, diverse farms are actually way more productive, that you get way more food. You may not get more corn, but you might
right.
get more food in the form of many different crops. And I've seen this time and time again in my own, you know, study of this topic, as well as this has been peer-reviewed science, it's good science, it says, productivity, because we want that fertility of the soil.
Mm.
When you work with the natural systems, you get a healthier system and you get a more productive system. I mean, I like your work. I've looked at it a little bit, and I've seen that it's very analogous to how you have the immune system in the body, you know.
Right.
How do you produce health? Well, you don't take everything out of it and run a marathon every day and don't eat anything, you know.
Right.
And that's what we're asking of our agricultural systems. We're saying, it's like putting our food system on steroids, although it's not,
mm-hmm.
that's not a precise example. I'm just
mm-hmm.
saying it's an artificial input to pump up production
mm-hmm.
at the expense of the basic immune system of the land and the natural systems, and using toxics to kill off the problems, which then, I mean, atrazine, which is a herbicide used
mm-hmm.
on cornfields, is almost in, I think, something like 90% of our rivers and streams in this country.
Right.
And it's a hormone disruptor. You may know how that works.
Yeah. I've got a whole clinic full of people with their endocrine system disruptors.
There you go. And there's plenty of evidence that, and so the reason I'm spending time talking about chemicals
mm-hmm.
is because it's the chemical industry that produced the genetically modified organisms and the GMOs.
Right.
So if you look at GMOs as a chemical, is the same in the same way, it's much
mm-hmm.
easier to understand. The industry that the biotechnology industry wants people to think these are a new invention, and they want people to think it's benign, and they want them to think that it's something that just came about. Well, they like to say, actually, that this is nothing new, that it's what plant breeders have done all along. So there's a lot of misinformation, disinformation,
mm-hmm.
and even downright lies that are going on in the promotion of that particular product. And you have
mm-hmm.
to understand that they've had 40 years of research and
mm-hmm.
billions of dollars. Monsanto spends $2 million
mm-hmm.
a day on R&D. They have never come up with anything that's useful. Look
at Dow Corning. Dow Corning had all the animal experiments showing that the animals were getting sick and even dying from the silicone implants implanted in them, and yet, you know, that was all in the 50s, and it all came out during the law, you know, during the court cases.
Yeah.
And basically, it's the same thing. I mean, they knew about the dangers. They suppressed the research. The ethics director at Dow Corning, his wife got deathly ill, and there's a book called Informed Consent about what he tried to do and how he got ousted. And, you know, just basically, these companies are not interested in public health. And in fact, when they discover that something is not healthy, they try to spin it, you know, toward profits by, you know, professionally, you know, trying to get the leaders of plastic surgery on their side, and you know, anybody who speaks out against them is, you know, it's just the whole thing again. I'm sure the farmers that, I'm sure you'll get into that in a minute, but a lot of it ends up in court, as you can imagine.
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen a Bill Moyer special called Trade Secrets. And it's an expose. It's fabulous. You can still get it online.
Mm-hmm.
Of the chemical industry in the 1950s, exactly as you're saying, they knew about the toxicity of 2,4-D and the really, you know, dioxin, things
dioxin,
like that.
Dioxin, yeah.
Excuse me. And of course they did not even let their workers protect themselves.
Right.
Let alone the environment or the public.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result, of course, of Rachel Carson's courageous work and others and the burgeoning in the early 1960s, they were exposed to that. Then we came along and people said, I want to know what's in my food and environment, and I want to know what it is, and I want it regulated. So we got some environmental laws, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then Reagan came along and deregulated the country, basically, and stopped all of this. But the same chemical companies that, one of the reasons I mentioned them, they're the same ones that are the biotech companies now,
mm-hmm.
is that they went to the White House, the Reagan White House in the early 1980s, and they made a deal with the federal government to not regulate biotechnology. They had been burned so badly with the chemical regulation,
mm-hmm.
where their product, they couldn't do whatever they wanted. And what they were really afraid of, Susan, was general liability, what they call general liability, that a whole bunch of people would get sick or have allergic reactions or immune dysfunctions from biotech products, and they didn't want any responsibility. That's why we have no labeling in this country, and that's
right.
why we have no regulation of this, of these substances, which are novel and can be toxic and can be really problematic, as I'm sure Jeffrey Smith laid out,
absolutely.
You know, very articulately. He's done most of the studies on the health issues.
Mm-hmm.
That, and so as a lawyer and former attorney for the U.S. government, I can say, I was in the government at the time,
mm-hmm.
I can say exactly what happened, and it's very well documented. This isn't a matter of my opinion. That deal was made, and right now the legal framework of what little, there's like a, it's like the lights are on, but nobody's home. There's a framework for regulation that appears to be, that the companies use as cover. They
right.
say,
they,
oh,
they
these have been
they
studied.
They can self-regulate. They can do
that. It's entirely voluntary. The government
right.
only knows what the industry tells them.
Right.
They don't do any studies. And you'll see the biotechnology industry organization, BIO, which is the main, they spend hundreds of millions of dollars on false advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Assuring the public that these things have been studied, that we understand
mm-hmm.
them. It's not true at all. And I go into the book, excuse me, in the book I go into the background of biotechnology, how it came about, how it was purposefully developed as a means of, I'm going to sound a little wacky here, but it was purposefully developed as a means of social control.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, I mean, a lot of technologies are. You can say, well, people wanted to use genetics to cure problems in the world. You know, people wanted to use, wanted to do good. but that doesn't mean, you know, so some people may have been motivated by that. But that doesn't mean that the technology that's developed along those lines, I mean, for instance, eugenics was used as, you know, with as the field of genetics developed and people understood, sort of. I mean, we actually don't even still know what genes are and how they work. I mean, everybody said DNA is the secret of life, and that's been completely disproven.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
that's called
true.
The central dogma. I get into that in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we now know that RNA is really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
And these genetically modified organisms that are in our food supply, in 80% of the stuff in the middle of the store, the processed foods, okay, these are substances that we do not understand how they interact in the body. The industry said, I don't know if you're familiar with something called horizontal gene transfer.
Yes, I am.
When you eat something, you think it's going to go through your digestive system and out the other
mm-hmm.
end, right? Well, that's vertical. If it's
right.
horizontal, it means it'll go into your bloodstream or move into other organs, right? So the industry
yes.
said there's no possibility. Excuse me in a second. I'm going to clear my throat. The industry said there was no possibility for horizontal gene transfer. I mean, now it's well established, and it's in bees.
Mm-hmm.
It's in animals. But they won't look at the body, the human body. I'm sure it's in us as well, where, particularly in bacteria, where
right.
these organisms, is it causing problems? We don't know.
Well,
we don't know because nobody's asking
it is
that question.
Because of the marked increase in soy and corn allergy that corresponds to right after these products became genetically modified. You know, if you look at the public health data.
Right. Right, and what I would like people to do is turn around to the government, as we did
mm-hmm.
with the chemical issues, and say, wait a minute, I want to know. I have a right to know what I'm putting in my body, that the government is failing in its very essential duty. I mean, what is government for if it's not to help protect us against forces that are not out, you know, that are against the common good, right? Like people think, oh, well, I want a government to help defend us, like, you know, military defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's
what
only
we're not,
one
we're
of
not
the
being
threat.
Attacked. The country's not being attacked.
Not right now.
Right now, except you know, you're getting attacked in terms of what you're putting in your mouth that you don't
exactly.
know about that might be harmful.
So I think that the government should have a role in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how easy would it be to study this or label it? So we had a
mm-hmm.
choice, like the rest of the world. I live in England part time. Susan,
yeah.
I walk down the grocery aisle, no GMOs,
mm-hmm.
GMOs, I mean, it's
right.
all right there. You get
yeah.
a choice, just like
yeah.
we do with sugar or yeast or eggs or whatever. Come on, folks, it's been on the market now since 1994.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. We're seeing some serious problems. And yet, do you have an idea about why Americans in particular just don't seem to get it or not? Can be concerned with.
I think it's because the American media is controlled by the forces that we're talking about. I think what comes through the regular media is completely, you know, controlled and I know it is. I mean, I have been in contact with reporters and other people in the media who say that they've been, you know, kind of told not to speak about certain things.
Oh, I have. I'm a reporter. I get
right.
it all the time. Oh,
yeah.
absolutely. Tone it down or tone down your critique as a corporation
right.
or you have to put on the other side. And I'm going, wait a second, if I'm reporting on a murder, do I have to interview the murderers?
Why did you do
you know?
That?
Yeah, right. I mean, let's give you a fair chance to tell your story here.
Maybe you had a good reason.
Wrong is wrong, folks. You know, I mean, lying and wrong is wrong. And I'm sorry. I think it's a moral issue because, you know, and I live in a community of people who, you know, I have my own belief systems and values,
mm-hmm.
but I live in a community. It's a Seventh-day Adventist community. It's Anglin,
mm-hmm.
California. Really wonderful people. Very, and you know, when I started telling, they didn't know anything about what was going on because
mm-hmm.
they're vegetarians. They eat a lot of soy. And I started explaining, and you know, about GMOs, and they were so appreciative and offended, you know. And then for them, for religious communities, where you know, if people don't are listening to this and don't know the difference between GMOs and everything else, is that a GMO mixes and matches species. So they put a fish gene in the strawberry. Okay.
Right.
Well, if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you don't want fish genes in your strawberries.
Right.
Okay, so the point is that you won't know in this country,
mm-hmm.
and you won't have that choice, or you might not have. So there are religious reasons for religious dietary reasons why people do absolutely have to know. But that's not what I call the moral issue. The moral issue for me is, in a free society, you have a right to know.
Right.
If you you're not free. If you don't have a choice about what to eat, what else is there? What other freedom is there if you don't have a choice about what to eat?
Well, let me tell you a little bit. I'm not sure if you know this. Jeffrey Smith didn't know it, but we see more Morgellons patients than probably any clinic on the East Coast. Morgellons is a disease that I think is pretty much coming from about 2000. There might be a few people before that, but the majority of the cases reported after 2000. It's a disease where they, it's a systemic disease. They get fatigue, mental clouding, real severe neurological problems, but also and GI problems. But they basically have lesions and or fibers coming out of their skin, and it's the lesions can get very large. And in fact, as a plastic surgeon, I sometimes have to do surgery on the tissue damage. There's insects coming out of the patients. There's worms coming out. There's fungus spores coming out. There's and
I haven't heard
of
anything worse. Awful.
Well, you ought to look on YouTube. There's pictures of it. All of these patients tested. There was one scientist who did studies, but then all of a sudden stopped doing studies, of course, because he was probably told to. Every single 100% of the patients had agrobacterium, which is used in genetically modified
foods. And all GMOs. Well,
and
my goodness.
Agrobacterium has the ability to insert foreign genes into our DNA. I did a number of radio shows with Dr. Staninger, who's an environmental toxicologist who studied Morgellons, and basically said that, you know, she felt that this was what was happening, that insect and parasite DNA was being inserted into human DNA. And then I've seen it myself. These things pop open and insects fly out of them. Now, of course, you know, the traditional medical community. Oh, it's horrible. The traditional medical community, of course, said that the patients are crazy because, you know, anybody who has anything that they don't understand needs to see a psychiatrist or take an antidepressant.
Right.
I mean, the dumbing down of American medicine is truly amazing.
Dumbing down of everything American.
Yeah, exactly. So basically the CDC eventually recognized this disease, and the doctor in charge of the Morgellons division, or whatever you want to call it, the area studying it, saw her first case in my office. She spent about 4 hours with the patient, and then she came out and she said, "Susan, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen."
Yeah.
So, you know, but she had, even though they recognized it for 6 months, she'd never seen a case. So
but this is exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
We need to establish a causal relationship here.
It will not be studied because
it won't be studied.
The powers that be will not allow it to be studied.
Yeah. So that's the problem. But I have to say that there are, and I document four or five stories of scientists who've been discriminated, not just who've been just destroyed by Monsanto and other country.
Yeah.
I mean, they really go after people. Anybody who dares. I have a funny thing to share with you. You probably have heard of the work of Armand Pushtai, a scientist in Scotland who was studying GMO lectin, and he found that rats, I mean, he found the immune issues. He found a lot of really serious problems in rats. I mean, most of what we know about how GMOs work in the body are from these rat studies.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't reconstruct the human gut, and we don't want to do human studies. So, and now the population's so full of GMOs, it's a question. But the point is that he found that animals had been fed this genetically modified food had larger stomachs and smaller brains.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, right, you get the joke already.
I
That's the perfect corporate food. Eat more and think less.
Right.
You know? That's what's going on here with our obesity. Yeah, it is. And it's like, so, I mean, that's why people say, well, what do I do? How do I eat when there's this threat? You know, I mean, well, a lot of people started eating organic because they didn't want the pesticide residue.
Yes.
And then they found out that organic food and local food was fresher and more nutritious than these processed GMO food. Oh, well, there's that, and you get to know your farmer. I mean, there's so many wonderful benefits.
Yeah.
But just getting back down to almost on the molecular level, there's so much that we don't want in those foods. And I was talking to someone yesterday at a conference, and they were saying, you know, one of the things that I think people really miss about changing the way they eat is that it's fun and delicious, and it revitalizes the communities. It revitalizes our sense of connection with each other. You remember me telling you about the changes in farming that happened in the 40s and 50s, and my book goes into seeds a lot, and I
right.
use the story of seeds to tell the story, because hybrid, the change from open pollinated seeds to hybrid seeds is part
mm-hmm.
of the same trajectory.
Right.
But, you know, taking back control over your seeds, having seed exchanges in your communities, having food exchanges where, you know, if you took, like, my small community, I walk down the street in the fall, and people are like, it's not just that big zucchini they're trying to hand you, but it's pears and it's apples
mm-hmm.
and it's everything else. People have an intuitive, almost DNA-based desire to share and to
mm-hmm.
be generous with each other. And boy, if we ever needed that kind of thing in our lives now, that's what we need. And food is a great way to start that, local food, you know, growing it yourself or cooking it yourself. And so it isn't, you know, even people don't have the means to buy much, they can, a lot can be done to revitalize the food in their diet. It's, you know, it just takes it takes some work. It definitely takes some work, but it can be done, and we don't have to eat that stuff.
I like the story in your book about the farmer who always gave seed away, his very, very high quality seed away to his neighbors. And when asked, you know, how could he do that if he wanted to win the local contest for his corn or whatever he was growing, he said, well, you don't understand. If I don't keep the surrounding fields healthy, my crops will eventually take a hit.
Exactly.
And that's so true of all of us. If we don't keep the people next to us healthy, we can be victims of crime. Washington University, I went to medical school there, bought up a lot of the housing and buildings around the university and converted them and upgraded them and then rented them back out as apartments and that kind of thing. Whereas Johns Hopkins, where I went as undergrad, didn't. Well, when you walked outside at 3 in the morning at Johns Hopkins to catch the bus, you were in danger. When you were walking around WashU, you were not in danger. So people don't understand how important community is. I mean, several prominent people, Leninger of the biochemistry fame, got stabbed right outside of Hopkins.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So you see how important it is to help your community, to help upgrade. Everything's energy, as you know. Energy determines relationship, and everything's energy. And if you allow the negative energy to come up to your doorstep, it will affect you, whether it be GMO corn in the fields next to you or crime, you know, because you've just forgotten your community and said you don't care about it and tried to make that ivory tower, you know, at the front door of the hospital. But it's a lesson,
right.
You know, it's a lesson
right.
that I think we all need to pay attention to.
I sure hope you will interview, boy, my voice is croaky this morning, frogs in my, excuse me for a second. I hope you will interview Richard Love, who wrote about the nature deficit disorder and children. I think it's called Last Child in the Woods.
Okay.
It's a fabulous book, and he's substantiated a lot of the ADD and problems we're having with kids are really, you know, directly related to having no connection with the natural world.
Well, I think so,
and,
too.
Yeah, I mean, and so, and I just wrote an article, you know, on a related topic, but,
mm-hmm.
And read his book as part of that, and I was stunned. And I'm a grandmother, and I really feel it's my responsibility as a grandmother to take the time that parents don't have these days
mm-hmm.
to take the grandchildren. If I can't take mine, take somebody else's. Well, you know, that would go now. But it used to be when we lived in communities, you could go for a walk with the kids.
Right.
And get them outside and help them feel safe in the neighborhood that they live in. Yeah, I like your analogy, Susan, to social safety. But I think in terms of the natural world, you cannot have just take a tree. You can't have a healthy tree standing in the middle of a thick forest.
No,
it isn't gonna survive.
No.
And that's what a lot of people are trying to do. They're saying, oh, I just care about my personal health. I don't care about my community or,
mm-hmm.
or nature around me. But it's the living system. I mean, our personal health is a living system, right?
It is. Well,
so
we've got water, you know, here. What's the quality of your water? What's the quality of your food? What's the quality of your air? I mean, public health has always been way more important in determining the, you know, individual health, public health conditions, sanitation conditions. That's what, and the quality of the food, water, and air that you breathe are the most important determinants of your individual health.
I had a really interesting example of it. I was I don't have a cable television. I don't watch television, but sometimes online I'll watch something like The Daily Show. And Jon Stewart had a very funny bit about something that Fox Television was doing, where they were talking about the farmers in the drought in San Joaquin Valley here in California. And he holds out one of these little minnows, which is a fish in the rivers, which we're trying to save, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, just this little fish, you know, these farmers, you know, and not only did he not understand the political system, and then he shouts into the camera, Mr. President, turn back the water on. And Jon Stewart goes, well, first of all, you know, Obama can't make it rain. But, you know, the reason these farmers are there is because the federal government gave away all that water. And then, you know, that was when there was, you know, maybe a third of the population of the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, we grew and grew and developed and developed and developed, and so everything's dying around us. We get that, for sure. We're all on the same page there. It's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But having the federal government has to allocate this water amongst all of these competing interests, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing that John, so he, you know, he made fun of the fact that they were pretending to be righteous people who were independent farmers and then asked the federal government to provide them with water, which the,
right.
in a desert so they can grow, so they can grow GMO cotton in the desert, you know, and then put African cotton farmers who are perfectly able to grow it just fine.
Out of business.
Out of business. So, you know, I mean, you know, first of all, I guess they would like that system. I don't. But this whole fish thing, and then I was on the airplane last week, and the stewardess and I were talking, because I went back to New York to get an award for my book, which I'm very proud of.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It won the American Book Award.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it really means a lot to me. It was a great, it's the second award it got. I'm really flabbergasted, actually.
I'm not.
Because I didn't write it.
I think your book's great.
Oh, thanks. Well, it turns out I guess I could write. Anyway, because I'm Irish, I thought, well, at least I can talk, you know. But I didn't know I could write. Anyway, so she said, oh, there's this, she was parroting exactly what Fox Television is. I'm standing there looking, wow, she really takes that seriously, because I think they're funny. I don't think they're, you know, I never would think anything they say is truthful, because they have this political agenda.
Right.
And so she said, but what Jon Stewart said was perfect, just to get to the point. And that is, if you think that fish doesn't matter, you don't understand the food chain.
No, you don't.
Yeah. You know, and I thought, oh, that was so perfect. I wish I'd had those kinds of responses when I talk to people, and they get this distorted view of the natural world, you know.
Right.
If you don't think that little fish is important to your being, your welfare, I'm sorry. And then it gets back to the children, what they know about the natural world. Our educational system, you know, has really let us down. People don't understand that we're biological beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that the biology of our surrounding area is crucial to our survival. It's much more important than the sort of scare tactics that are going on around our physical and social security. And I don't mean social security. I mean, you know, Al-Qaeda or something. You know, it's like
we're
way, way, way more likely to die of these things than we are, you know,
a terrorist attack.
Yeah. I mean, not that those fears don't have some sense. I mean, I was just at Ground Zero last week, you know. Not that those fears don't have, or that people don't suffer, but actually the people in Afghanistan and Iraq are the ones who are really suffering. And as you know, I start my book with how important the seeds and traditional crops are of the what used to be called the Fertile Crescent in Mesopotamia. And they were all collected in a seed bank and a plant breeding institute that supported a very important network of agriculture in Iraq. And when we invaded in 2003, the United States destroyed that.
Right.
And then we came in behind that and imposed our GMO chemical-laden uniform agriculture seeds on the Iraqi farmers.
Right.
Yeah. As if they were in the Midwest growing, you know, corn and soybeans. It's unbelievable. But that does prove that we have an agenda around this agriculture.
Yeah.
We definitely do.
And basically government and industry are aligned perfectly and have been probably, well, you said since Reagan anyway. And they're not looking out for the interests of the public or the farmers.
Do you think that as you talk to people in your work, do you think that generally the American people think government's not helpful and on their side? Are they misled by? Do they understand the reality?
I think they have kind of a fairy book understanding, a hopeful understanding, especially since Obama got elected. You know that everything's going to be okay because the government's going to give them what they need. It's a dependency.
Well, what are we
model.
Seeing in the healthcare? Let's not talk about the healthcare.
Yeah, really.
Thing, but, you know, it is the insurance industry that's driving the issues here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they, you know, big. What people need to understand is that corporations aren't just American. Corporations are multinational.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the multinational corporations run the agendas of the world pretty much. And I think they tell the governments what to do in many cases.
I saw it. I was advising the Minister of Agriculture in Vietnam in 1994-95. Mm-hmm. We took him on a tour of all the farming issues around the United States. He was the highest level Vietnamese official to visit the United States since the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had tons of State Department security, and it was a very big deal. My husband at the time, he's still my husband, but at the time.
There you go.
I don't like having a husband of the day. That would be interesting. He was an executive in the rice business, which, you know, down there in the South is really important. So it was American rice, and they were in a joint venture with the Vietnamese government. So we had an opportunity. I had an opportunity to take him on. And one of the things we did was, you know, you have the Southern Christian Leadership Foundation. You have a lot of black farmers in the South who are really, really great farmers. And the minister said, as we finished this tour of the whole country, he said they were the farmers that he related to the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were farming the way that most Vietnamese farm.
Right.
You know, small, more, you know, growing interesting local crops for, you know, more
mm-hmm.
community and regional economies. And yet, as I was advising him over the years, because I was trying to help them establish organic standards for the country, because they use so many chemicals,
mm-hmm.
I lost my train of thought there. Oh, sorry, I totally lost my train of thought. Way too many stories in my head around that one. But, you know, he just, you know, they didn't, I would watch, like, the Feed Grain Council, that was my point. I would watch these big multinational corporations walk in with suitcases full of money, you know. And I'm not going to name names on that one. But,
mm-hmm.
and then what's really interesting is I'd observe these meetings, and I'd see this thing, or even, you know, I hate to say it, even the United Nations Development Program, Environment Program, all these quote-unquote expensive consultants, I heard a statistic the other day that said that for all our aid, and this is, I think, just U.S., only 39 cents of the dollar goes into aid. So almost 70% of the aid feeds the consultants and the government officials and fat cats and
business.
All that. It's just
That's
business.
Right.
Our
yeah.
food aid does not help feed the country. It feeds the corporations because what basically we pay corporations to send their bad GMO corn to African countries who would much rather grow their own sorghum or something.
Yeah.
But
well,
we won't help them do that.
And there is an underlying intent worldwide to limit population. So why would you actually want to feed people?
It is.
Yeah.
That's one of the
major misunderstandings of Of course, you know, you're raised with the watching TV and reading books and seeing movies and thinking that there is a greater good that we are all engaged in, especially the U.S. because we give so much aid to other countries, but. There are agendas that are pretty clear if you study history. I mean, you can read the documents yourself. I mean, I won't go into all of that, but you can go and put population control in on Google and then read the overall plans because they have been in existence for many, over 50 years. And then you have to ask yourself, you know, what is the true agenda? and how are they going to do this?
Do you want my take on it?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't thought this whole through and like written a book about it, but basically it comes from what I know as a woman and having seen how women feed their families. You know, women feed the world. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go on a little rant about women and I'll tell you the conclusion up front. And that is, if you want to control population, you empower women and educate women.
Right.
Simple. Fact. Not disputed. Nobody who knows anything would ever say that's not,
mm-hmm.
you know, the case. So then you take a step back and you go and you look at what's actually happening. And this is, I think, a great way to look at anything you're concerned about is that you try to find out what the best science, the best information that we have in this silly little, you know, 21st century where we are, where we like to think we know everything, but everybody's always thought we knew it all, you know,
right.
And then we find out the next piece. But we didn't. But from what we do know now,
mm-hmm.
you know, giving our best idea, what is the ideal or the optimum, right? And then you take a book and you say, what is actually happening? Because what is actually happening is the policy. You would never go and say, okay, federal FDA, what is your policy? And try to say that is actually what's happening. Of course it's not what's happening. Because it'll be a combination of politics and science and whatever agenda, whatever is going on at the moment. If you look at what's actually happening, in going back to population control, you'll see the enormous suppression of women all over this country. All over the planet. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the exploitation of children, the exploitation of cheap labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can put the pieces together and see who benefits. I mean, the third question everyone has to ask about technology or any of these big, large political problems that we're talking about is who's benefiting?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would the world be like? What would it take? I mean, if we empowered and educated women and we allowed children to play in a healthy, natural setting and have an education, if we just said, if we changed the whole world to just care for its children,
mm-hmm.
all our problems would disappear.
Yeah.
We have a native intelligence
to solve all of our problems,
well,
given that we're allowed to access that inner intuition. And the women have always been the holders of the intuitive, for the most part. Not that men aren't intuitive. Some are very intuitive. But
well, they do all the work. The women, I've noticed all over the Third World,
mm-hmm.
in the studies, the World Bank and all the studies,
mm-hmm.
women do 85% of all the agricultural work in the world. We don't know
mm-hmm.
this because we see big machines and guys in, you know,
right.
$300,000 tractors, and we think that's agriculture. Uh-uh. That's industry.
Right.
That's not agriculture, folks. Because most 60% of what's being grown around people, like you're in the South and other people,
mm-hmm.
is animal food. It's for
right.
industrialized animals and for
mm-hmm.
chemicals and other, you know, products. It has nothing to do with feeding people.
Yeah. Well, let's talk just a minute about the seeds. I mean, it used to be
okay.
that neighbors shared their seeds, neighboring farmers. Seeds were traded, sold. There was a big why is it important to have a biodiversity of seeds in the planet? Why is it so important?
Well, we get immediately into one of the most important issues, which is that whoever controls the future of seeds controls the future of food, or maybe even the future of the planet. Because
yes.
we are a seed planet.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you don't have any eco-literacy, you don't remember that most of the plants on the planet are actually seeded flowering plants. Certainly our food supply is
right.
all of that. So I'll give a little seed 101 here where seeds, you know, as the Bible says, all flesh is grass. Okay,
mm-hmm.
grasses are seed plants. And so even if you eat meat, you end up with, you know, that animal is dependent on the seeded plants for
yeah.
food. So the whole system that we're relying on for survival, the trees,
mm-hmm.
for structures, for carbon, it's all seeds,
mm-hmm.
it's all plants. Okay, so,
right.
so seeds are a fundamental biological, just like water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not something we talk about because water is an easier,
mm-hmm.
really, really essential. But there's also a social component to seeds.
Mm-hmm.
As we are seeded people, the modern human, Homo sapiens, okay, we developed our intelligence and our social systems once we had a relationship with seeds. Now, people like to tell the story in terms of, you know, we settled down and we began to farm. that's an oversimplification of it. I'll set that aside for a moment, but that's an easy way to say, oh yeah, okay, right, we began to farm. So our relationship with seeds, both domestic animals and domestic plants. And at the time we probably had available, I mean, I'm saying about 10,000 years ago, right? I mean, in Vietnam, I was told there was 100,000 varieties of rice when I was living there, okay?
Yep.
So you know, if you want to say what's edible in the seed, in the plant world, you have about 50,000 edible plants available, okay? And about 150 of those are actually sort of commercially interesting, okay? About 40 of those are cultivated regularly. But the world depends on only three, okay?
Yeah.
Rice, wheat, and corn. So half the world's calories are coming from just three seeded things, okay? So the short list is about a dozen crop. Okay, the FAO, you know, I'm not making this up stuff, has studied this forever.
Yeah.
And they have estimated, so I just described the biodiversity of the food system, okay,
right.
The genetic basis of all these food systems, okay. As of now, 75% of all the genetic diversity of agricultural food possibilities are gone. So it's already 75% gone. We only have 25% of what we had maybe even 100 years ago. If you're talking about the old varieties that are, you know, open pollinated or old pears and apples and things that people's grandparents grew, 97% of those are gone. Okay? So we are, because of rapid development, desertification, deforestation, water pollution, industrial agriculture is the biggest culprit here. Okay, and then I'm going to name the other one in a second. But basically, it's just stripped the planet of its productive food system foods.
Right.
So the most important, of course, is the most important threat now is ownership of seeds. So of those several, you know, half dozen crops, or maybe, you know, give them 30 important crops, every single one of them has been genetically engineered. Every single one of them has been patented. I'm not saying they're on your supermarket as such. I'm saying there was a gold rush, a genetic gold rush going on to get out there and seize these and put them in storage. So on the one hand, governments, international and national and local, stop funding the great seed banks and plant breeding institutes. Our country and most, any developed country that's been wealthy over the last 100 years has been wealthy because it has a great food system. Not only is its populace healthy, but, you know, we need that. That's a basics, okay?
Right.
So they do that because they planted, they would breed plants, the public, public plant breeding. That would withstand, I mean, we had a terrible corn rust problem in the South, and, you know, during Nixon's time and stuff. And they went into the seed bank and they got seeds from Mexico that were resistant to the rust and overcame the problem. That's all gone now. I mean, it exists in skeletal form. But now Syngenta, Novartis, Monsanto, Dow, and DuPont, which bought Pioneer Seed, own all the big seed companies. They dominate all of the plant breeding, especially at the land-grant universities, and their seed libraries, and their defunding, and, you know, part of the Reagan Revolution was to defund everything public. So our seed banks are declining. So you get a picture of this land, this genetic grabbing, of all of the precious germplasm that has kept this planet alive. Why? Because if you, you know, get back to my first point, if you own, which is another word for control, this essential aspect of life, and you can charge for it, you know, you're gonna be in a position of power and profit. So it's a huge, huge, huge problem that people just don't think about and don't
know
about.
They're not even aware of, right?
Yeah. So do you want me to get to the solution?
Yeah, we only have a few more minutes, though. So.
No, right. I'll just say it quickly. Get
okay.
back to, you know,
right.
seed saving. Well, I already kind of mentioned it a couple of times. Just go back to seed saving, local seed companies, local seed exchanges. if you buy a nice hybrid tomato, I mean, heirloom tomato from your local farmer, you know, after you finish enjoying the tomato, save 10 seeds. It's so easy, right? Put them on a little saucer, let them ferment overnight. save the seeds and grow your own.
Mm-hmm.
And people can do that. I mean, we still have enough of this germplasm in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the supermarket, you say, look, I see a green apple and a red apple and a yellow apple, but I would like, you know, I would like real apples, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 90% of all our apples are gone.
Yeah.
You know, all the pears, you know, so you have to go to the farmer's market or you have to go to your neighbor that's got that tree.
Mm-hmm.
So people need to become more proactive.
Mm-hmm.
In identifying healthy food that has that genetic variability in it,
mm-hmm.
that's not owned by a corporation,
yeah,
and put it back into
using
the food
it.
Supply.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
It's so fun.
That's
it's
so
really
easy.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
Right.
You know, and it's happening all over the country. I mean, people can go to the Organic Seed Association's
mm-hmm.
website, osa.org, I believe it is, Seed Savers Exchange. You can, you know, heirloom seeds, you could Google that. People can look this up and get in touch with local people, the potato farmers in Maine and rice farming, you know, the golden rice that the original Africans brought into South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
All over this country there are wonderful food crops that we can get back in touch and support and revitalize our food system.
Well, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Claire Hope Cummings on her great book, Uncertain Peril, Genetic Engineering and the Future of Seeds. The book is a great resource, too, for what she's been talking about in terms of identifying and then preserving the natural lines that we need to preserve that may not be preserved 20 years from now unless we do it. And I think that's a great answer. Next week.
What an enjoyable show. Thank you so much. I had a great time talking
with
you.
Well, we'll have you back on because we only covered about half the stuff in your book, as you know.
And I'm on to a whole new issue too, so I very much enjoy that, Susan. Thanks.
I'll have Gio call you to get you back on.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us.
And thank you.
Next week we have Lee Gertz with Limitless You, The Infinite Possibilities of a Balanced Brain. And then on the 31st, Beyond 2012, Catastrophe or Awakening. If you would like our newsletter with all of the events as well as the Noetic Science Meeting, please go to our website, www.templeofhealth.ws or plasticos.com, and there are previous newsletters up as well. Again, Claire, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll have you back on.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute, you look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plasticos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plasticos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plasticos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plasticos at 770-457-4677. Plasticos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.